Okay, I think it's time for us to get started, and anybody else who comes in will join us in the middle. This is Zvi Grommet. I'm in Yerushalayim, and it's really a pleasure to be speaking with all of you today. I see we have people from the East Coast, from the West Coast, and from Israel as well. So it's good morning for the West Coast, good afternoon for the East Coast, and Erev Tov for those in Israel. Today we're really going to focus on the four questions. And I chose the four questions primarily because it comes at a really interesting juncture in the Seder itself. Many of you know that there's a machloket in the Gemara about the core of the Haggadah. And there basically are two positions in the Gemara. One of them is Rav and the other one is Shmuel. Shmuel says that in response to the question of Matchilin b'gnutu maseim b'shvach, you have to begin the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim by talking about the bad things and then moving on towards the good things, which essentially is a very, very powerful educational tool. In order to appreciate what you have, you first have to know what it's like not to have it. It's one of the kinds of things that we see all the time. You want people to appreciate what Israel is, they have to, and the significance of the state of Israel, they have to understand what it was like before there was a state of Israel, so they can understand what the significance of it is, with all the warts and with all the problems. And here too, we live today, we take our freedom for granted, we take who we are for granted, but looking back, it's important to understand what was before. So, putting all these things together, the Gemara talks about Matchil B'Gnut, actually the Mishnah says Matchil B'Gnut U'Misayim B'Shvach. We have to begin by describing the things in their worst condition, and then move on from there to appreciate things in that we have now. So it's actually Machloket in the Gemara in the interpretation of to what the specific application of that means. Rav essentially says that Matchil B'Gnut means that you start by talking about Mitchila Uvde Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. We basically focus on some kind of spiritual slavery, some kind of spiritual oppression that we almost brought upon ourselves, going all the way back to Terach. On the flip side, we have Shmuel, who says no, we start not with Terach and not with spiritual slavery, but we start with Yitziat Mitzrayim, or with slavery Mitzrayim, Avadin Hayu L'Paro Mitzrayim. If you were to take a look at the Haggadah, and then just break it down, it turns out that the Haggadah has a number of introductory passages. We have the Kadesh, and the Urachat, and the Karpat, and the Yachat, and then we have the introduction, where there are actually two introductions to the Magid. One of them is Halach Ma'anya, and the other one is Manishtana. And those are generic kinds of introduction. Today we're not going to do the Haggadah. And then we have to be very short. I would venture to say components to it. One, Avadim Hayinu, that short passage there ending with V'chol ha-marbel es akher b'yitziat Mitzrayim harei zeh meshubach. Passage number one. Passage number two, Ma'atzev Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, which is basically an illustration of the Kulanu Chachamim, Kulanu Nevonim, etc., that here we have great Chachamim, great scholars, and there they are in Bnei Brak, and they have decided that it is important for them to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim all night long. Then we have what I would call Brichot HaTorah. The Brichot HaTorah, essentially, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shunatan Torah Liamo Yisrael. That's Brichot HaTorah. So before we learn, we sit down to make a bracha. So we have a Brichot HaTorah as the introduction, and then we have Keneged Arba Abanim Dibra Torah. And it's after that Shmuel's version of the Magid ends. But right after that, we move into Rav's version of the Magid. Mitzchilah ve'avod azarah ha'yuavu teinu. So according to Shmuel, there are four key portions to the Magid. There's the Avadim Hayinu. There's the Masa Rabbi Eliezer, which illustrates the end of Avadim Hayinu. There's Berchot HaTorah, and then we have the four sons. Turns out then that the four sons is a very central part of Shmuel's Haggadah. And the question is, what's it doing there? Why is it so important? And then to sort of work our way backwards, where does the notion of four sons even come to? Even come from? So I'm going to start by posting four questions. They're not the four questions of the Haggadah, but they're my four questions. What's the origin of the notion of the Torah speaking about four sons? Where does that come from? When that five sons? I know it's convenient in the Haggadah, there was a lot about the number four. But where does the Haggadah get the notion that there are four sons from? Number two, what determines the identification of each of those four in terms of the questions that they ask? Number three, where do the answers come from? And we're going to see that it's not so simple as where the answers come from. And finally, why is this such an important component of the Haggadah? These four sons are, for Shmuel, 25% of the Magid. So what's going on there? Why is that so significant? So I'm going to start essentially by just bringing up a slide that has on it the text of the Haggadah. Keneged arba'a banim dibra Torah. This is actually an emerging of this text with another one, which we're going to speak about in just a second. Basically, the author of the Haggadah did not make this up. The Haggadah took the notion of the four sons from the Mechilta. The Mechilta is the Midrash Haggadah on Sefer Shmot. Midrash Halacha on Sefer Shmot. And the Mechilta is the one that introduces the notion of the four sons. What we have here is basically the version from the Haggadah with one or two minor changes. So, Keneged Arba'a Banim Dibra Torah, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad Shinoy Yadashol. And then we have the text that we're all very familiar with. Chacham Mahu Omer, and we're given his question, and then we're given his answer. Then we have the Rasha, and we have his question and his answer. Then we have the Tam, his question and his answer. And then we have the Shinoy Yadashol. And of course, the Shinoy Yadashol has no question, because he doesn't know how to ask. He has just an answer. And we come to V'higadot ha'levincha ayom ha'u le'mor. So the question, again, the first question we want to deal with is, where does this notion of the four sons come from? For that, all we need to do is open up a chumash. And what I've done here is to be taken that very same text and highlighted it with a little bit of color, so we could see the identification. The Chacham Rasha Tamin Sheino Yodea Lishol I put here in the red. The questions themselves I put in green on each line so we can see what the questions are. And of course, Sheino Yodea Lishol is no green because he has no question. And then we have the answers. Now these are the answers the way they appear in our Haggadah, which is essentially the way they appear in the Mechilta. So understand that the Seder, the Haggadah, did not make this up. It got it from a source, a very, very early source. The Midrash Halacha is a Tanaitic Midrash, which means it's a very, very early source. And basically, what the Mechilta did was it actually found four different places in the Torah where the Torah talks about teaching your children. That's all it is, teaching your children, and the context. In each case, when the Torah talks about teaching your children, it talks about teaching your children in the context of Pesach, somehow or another, or in the context of Yitziat Mitzrayim. So what the Mechilta did was it looked and it said, I have four different texts. They all relate to teaching the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Oh, that's interesting. Why do I need four different texts to tell me the same thing? One mitzvah should be enough. I don't need four different mitzvot over here. So with the Mechilta, it tried identifying them. We have the Chacham as one of the questions, and we see that question actually stands out from all the others. That question, the origin, the source of that question, comes from Sefer Devarim. And that's going to be significant as we go on a little bit further. other three questions, the Rasha, the Tanya, all within two prakim, Shmot Perek Yud Beit and Shmot Perek Yud Gimel. That's the source of all the questions. So just so we understand, the Haggadah didn't make this up, the Mechilta didn't make this up. They looked in the Torah, and in the Torah what they found was the four questions, or four different times the Torah talks about teaching your children something about Yitziat Mitzrayim, and now the Mechilta is trying to make sense out of why you need all four. On this next slide, which is just a very slight modification of the previous one, I present not only the sources for the question, but also the sources for the answers. And this begins to raise for us all sorts of problems. Let's just take them one by one. Chacham mahu omer. Chacham, so what's his question? Maha idot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tiva Hashem Elokeinu otanu. Okay, very simple. Hold on just one second, please. That's actually a mistake, and it should be at Chem. And here again is one of the interesting twists. This particular version is the version of the Mechilta, but the version of the Haggadah itself has Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Etchem, which is fairly significant, and we'll see as we go on a little bit further why that's significant. The source for this, and it's interesting that the Mechilta misquotes the source, instead of Etchem, which is the pasuk, it quotes Otanu. The question comes from Sefer Devarim. The answer does not come from Sefer Devarim. In fact, the answer that the Haggadah offers doesn't even come from Chumash at all. The answer that the Haggadah offers comes from Mishnah Masechet Pesachim. That has to raise all sorts of questions, because the Chumash does give an answer. So the first question we have to deal with over here is why does the Haggadah or the Mechilta not give the answer that the Chumash itself offers? We have a similar problem when we come to the Rasha. Rasha asks the question, Maha Avodah Hazot Lachem. Right, that comes from Shmot Perek Yud Beit. The answer that's given to him does not come from Shmot Perek Yud Beit, it comes from Shmot Perek Yud Gimel. And you'll see that highlighted in the blue under the Rasha, Va'avur Zeh, Asa Hashem Li B'Tzitim Mitzrayim, Shmot Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Chet, Li V'lo Lo, Ilu Hayit Hashem, and that again is the version of the Mechilta. Our version, our Haggadah, is Ilu Haya Sham, Lo Haya Nigal. It's an interesting difference between the Mechilta and the Haggadah. The Mechilta has this addressing the Mechilta has this addressing the Rasha directly, while our Haggadah does not, and that's going to be a significant distinction that we'll see in just a few moments. The answer is it does not match. The answer comes from somewhere else. I see Roy is having a problem with his volume. Maybe one of the technical people can help Roy out with the volume issue, unless everybody else is having a problem with the volume as well. The third one is fairly straightforward. The Tam asks the question, Shmot Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph, and the answer is right there in the same pasuk. There's no problem with matching up the answer with the question of the Tam. We'll need to understand a little bit further as to why this question is identified with the Tam, and why the other question is identified with the Rasha and Chacham, etc. But that's the work we still have to do. And the Sheino Yodei on the show, there can't be a problem of matching up the question and the answer, because there's no question. There's just an answer. So there we have Shmot Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Chet. And Yigadet HaLevin Cha B'Yom Ahu Leimor V'Avur Zeh Sa Hashem Li V'Seiti Yimitzrayim. So the Sheino Yodei Lishol actually starts with the answer. There is no question. One of the other interesting things that we notice here, and I'm going to see if I can't highlight this for you, is that the answer that's given to the Rasha seems to be exactly the same as the answer that's given to the Sheino Yodei Lishol. I just underlined the answers given to the Rasha, and now I'm going to equally underline the answers given to the Sheino Yodei Lishol, and you'll see that they're identical. But the Rasha and the Sheino Yodei Lishol are clearly not the same person, and the Mechilta understands they need to be addressed differently. Then how do we get away with giving the same answer to two very, very different kinds of individuals? So we have in front of us quite a bit of work and approximately half hour in which to try to sort all this stuff out and make some sense out of it. And then, of course, come back to our original question, why is all this so important to Shmuel so that he places it as a significant part of the Haggadah? Okay. In order to begin to deal with this, I'm just going to back up for a second. Let's deal with some of the easier things first, and then we're going to get into some of the more challenging ones. Identifying Sheino Yodei Lishol is not difficult. As to why the Mechilta, why the Haggadah thought to identify somebody like that, because there is no question, it begins straight with the God tells Vincha, you shall tell your son, and tells us what exactly to tell your son. So that identification is not a difficult identification. Similarly, matching up the answer to the question of the Tam, that comes straight from the Chumash, and that's exactly what we would have expected. Let's take a little bit of a look at trying to understand and identify why one of them is called a Tam and one of them is called a Rosh. And for here, what I've done is when I'm trying to watch the chat at the same time to make sure I can be in touch with all the different things that are going on over here. Is it possible to print out my presentation? That's a really good question. What I will do at the end of this session is I will give you all my email. You can email me directly, and I'd be very happy to email you my PowerPoint. So and then you can print out your PowerPoint to your heart's content. Okay? What I've done here on this slide very simply is to line up the two questions, the one of the Tam and the one of the Rasha. On the right hand side we have Vayaki Tavo La Aret Asheitena Hashem Lachem Sheidiber Ushmaratem Et Avodah Hazot Lachem Vayaki Amru Lechem Bneichem Ma Avodah Hazot Lachem. That seems like a fairly simple question, especially if you look at the language that's used over here. And we have at the end of Pasuk Kaf Hei, we're told that we should observe this Avodah, Ha'avodah Hazot. Well, Pasuk Kaf Vav in the response, Pasuk Kaf Vav in the question relates directly to that same issue, the Avodah Hazot, Maha Avodah Hazot Lachem. So it's clear that whoever is asking the question here is asking a fairly simple question, right? We were told about Avodah Hazot, and now we have the response, or the question that comes, that's prompted by this Avodah Hazot. So it seems like a fairly simple question. If I were to compare that to the question that's offered on the other side of the page, the one from Shmuel Peres Yud Gimel, when identified with the Tam, the question, if you take a look in Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayaki Shalcha Bincha Machar Lemor Mazot. Mazot is a fairly simple question. In fact, Mazot is probably no simpler than Maha Avodah Hazot Lachem. All it's doing is looking what's there and putting the word Ma in front of it. We need to begin to explore why is it that the Mechilt identified one of these as a Tam, and one of these is a Rasha. From the questions themselves, it's really difficult to determine that. So the question itself, and I look at the four questions they ask at the bottom, from the question itself, it's very hard to determine why one of them is identified one way and the other one identified the other way. The context of the question is interesting, because the one from Shmuel Perek Yud Beit is talking about Avodah, And Avodah in Tanakh usually refers to Avodah in the Mikdash. In truth, Shmuel Perek Yudbeit, which we just read this past Shabbat, focuses on the Avodah of the Karban Pesach. So the Torah tells us, or Moshe tells us, that in future years, do this same Avodah, the same Karban Pesach, and then later on, somebody's going to ask you, one of your kids is going to ask you about this Avodah, about this Karban Pesach. So there's an event that's happening, and the event is what sparks the question. Truth is, Shmuel Perek Yud Gimel is not much different. Because there too we have something where there's an event that's happening, and the event sparks a question. There the issue is Pidyon Bechor, or Karban Bechor. And when we bring or do whatever we need to do with our Bechor, then the son is going to ask us, then the Torah gives us an answer. Truth is, the context doesn't help us identify which one is a Tam, which one is a Rasha. The content of the question doesn't help us identify. The theme which sparks the question doesn't necessarily help us identify which one is a Tam and which one is a Rasha. And now we have to go back to the question as to why is it that the Mechilta assumes that one of these belongs to a Tam and one of these belongs to a Rasha. I would start by taking a look at a number of elements. I'll try highlighting these, and let's see if I can bring up a different color for my highlight, so that we can... Okay, my colors aren't working right now, so I'm just going to have to do it in the plain old black. If we take a look at a number of key elements, it will help us understand the difference between them. Let's take a look at the question on the right hand side, the one identified with the Rasha. I think there are three elements that we can focus on. One of them is the word Yomru. Okay? There's a fundamental difference between Lemor on the one hand and Lish'ol on the other hand. Lish'ol is a question. Vayaki yish'alcha bincha. Right? If your son should ask you, that seems to be the question of the Tam. Contrast that or compare that to the question of the Rasha. The Rasha doesn't ask the question. The Rasha tells you, or the one identified with the Rasha tells you the question. That's really interesting. And anybody who's ever dealt with kids understands, or even sometimes with adults, sometimes you're sitting in a room and somebody asks a question, and truth is, they're not really asking a question, they're telling you their answer. They're asking a rhetorical question. And those rhetorical questions, they're not waiting for an answer. They're actually interested in challenging. A challenge, when somebody tells you their question as opposed to asks you their question, there's a fundamental difference. And they're not really waiting for any kind of response. In fact, not only are they not waiting for a response, but there's very little response that you can offer that will be meaningful. So perhaps the fact that the question is Shmuel Perek Yudbeit is focused on Yomru as opposed to Yishalcha. That's one distinction. Second distinction has to do with the number of people involved. The text from Shmuel Perek Yud Gimel talks is in the singular. In fact, all the other texts are in the singular. V'hayaki yish'alcha bincha, or mazot, or v'yigadata levincha, or by the chacham, the same thing. All of them are in the singular. They're all questions in the singular. And here, when it comes to the Rasha, or the one identified as the Rasha, it's in the plural. The sense that we have over here is that what the Chumash is describing is a scene in which we have a younger generation challenging an older generation. The older generation is doing certain things, and the younger generation is challenging them with rhetorical questions, why are you doing all this stuff? Like, what is this to you? V'ayaki yomru aleichem b'neichem. In the plural, it's the, a mass of the children addressing the mass of the adults. That sounds like a whole generational kind of a challenge, which may help us understand why is it that the Mechilta sought to separate these out and to suggest that one of these is actually an innocent question, even on the surface they look the same ma, but it's the background and the context that really helps shape what kinds of question this is, so that one of them really is an innocent question, and the other one is maybe not such an innocent question. If we take a look and just follow this through a little bit further, what we have over here is just a little bit more of an expanded version of this slide. Has a question on the top, just like we had on the previous slide. Underneath that, in the blue, I have the text, or we have the text that the Chumash offers as the response, and then the text that the Haggadah offers as a response. And here again, there seems to be, when it comes to the Tam, the one on the left-hand side, it matches up perfectly. And if you take a look in the blue on the left-hand side, in Pasuk Yud Dalid, the Amarta Elav, right, you should respond to him, this is a simple question of Mazot, the Amarta Elav, the Chozik Yad, if you take a look, that's exactly the answer that the Haggadah offers. It's an interesting question as to why the Haggadah didn't quote the rest of the text. Now, the rest of the text in Shmot Perek Yud Gimel, we have another two psukim. So the text of the Chumash offers us a much more thorough response. The Haggadah doesn't seem to offer that. And I would offer here something very simple. The text in the Chumash, we have to remove the text of the Chumash from the Midrash. The Mechilta is the Midrash. The Haggadah is the Midrash. The text of the Chumash is very clear. The text of the Chumash assumes that we're going to do something weird. We're either going to sacrifice a firstborn or do pidyon on a firstborn. We're going to do something weird, and the kids are going to look at this and ask us, can you please explain to me what this is? And the explanation includes the whole description of the Bechor. Well, the Haggadah is not so interested in the description of the Bechor. What the Haggadah is interested in is the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. The story of Yitziat Mitzrayim is captured only in that first line. The Chozek Yad Totzianu Hashem Mitzrayim Yibet Avadim. Everything afterwards is the explanation of the whole business of the Bechor. The business of the Bechor doesn't really belong as much in the Haggadah, even though it belongs very much in the Chumash. So we understand that the Haggadah may have used a shortened version, an abbreviated version of that very question. If we go to the right-hand side, to the question of the Rasha, things become a little bit more complicated. Especially since there are two versions of the response to the Rasha, one from the Mechilta and one from the Haggadah, and then there's the response that the Chumash offers. The Chumash offers the response of Ba'amartem Zeva Pesachu Lashem Asher Pasach Al Batei Vnei Yisrael Mitzrayim V'Nopot Mitzrayim V'Nopot Mitzrayim V'Batei Vitzil. So it seems that the Chumash doesn't assume that there's anything untoward about the question. The Chumash assumes that there's a question that's going to be asked, and you're going to give a response. Yes, this is the Korban Pesach. We're bringing on the words of Pesach and Pasach, and Hashem skipped over our houses. We're all very familiar with this. The answer then that the Chumash gives seems like a very... The question then is, why did the Baal Haggadah or the Mechilta take this to the extreme that it did, and assuming that we have over here, and we need to respond in this extraordinarily harsh way. What I suggest over here is that the author of the Haggadah needs to be somewhat consistent. Once he's already identified that the person over here is a different person, it's not simply a different question coming from a different context. Right. Mechilta over here is assuming, and the Haggadah is assuming, that it's not simply the context that's different, but the questioner is different. And that's really the big chiddush of the Haggadah, that we have four questions. question, the four questions are not simply four different situations, but they're actually four different individuals. Once we've identified the individual over here, then the Haggadah goes a little bit further and picks up on the word Lachem. Not only on the Yomru in the plural, and not only on the Yomru as opposed to Yish'alu, but also the statement, right? I'm telling you my question as opposed to asking my question. It also picks up on the Lachem. And we'll see, if you take a look at the answers that the Haggadah offers, Lachem v'lo lo, right? Meaning it makes a big deal about Lachem. And we'll see that the two versions, the Mechilta and the Haggadah, when it comes to the Chacham, have a machloket about what to do with this. And here as well, there's a machloket between the Mechilta and the Haggadah as to what to do with this. What does the Haggadah do with this? Lachem v'lo lo, Ulefisho tiyat atzvom enakval, meaning he took himself out, he said, Avodah azot lachem, it's your problem, that you're the previous generation, you're the old timers, and what is this to you anyway? It's a challenge, it's not a question. And because he removed himself, says the Haggadah kafar ba'ikar, right? He's not part of it anymore. He's not part of the story anymore. And therefore, what we need to do is we need to give a response. And the response over here is an interesting response. Hakhei et shinav doesn't mean to hit his teeth. It actually means maybe to set his teeth on edge or something along those lines. But give a response, that's not really a response. There is no halamina, there is no dream that anything that we say to the Rasha is going to make an impact on the Rasha. When you're involved in some kind of polemic with somebody, there's really very little chance that the polemic that you respond to them is really going to impact on them in any significant kind of way. But that doesn't mean that you don't have to respond. It's sort of like what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, Dam ala hashiv apikoros. It doesn't say to respond to the apikoros, but you should know what to respond to the apikoros, because the fact that he's there and shoving his question in your face basically is a challenge to everybody all around. You have to know what to respond. You have to say something that's going to answer yourself, your own questions, and is going to answer the questions of all the on, then you're in a bad position. But there's no dream that anything we say to the Rasha is going to impact upon the Rasha. And therefore, what the Haggadah suggests is you should tell him, Ba'avur Zah Asah Shami B'Tzeitimi Mitzrayim, right? Hashem did this to me, did this for me when I left Mitzrayim, and if he would have been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. One of the really, really interesting things over here is the two versions of this text over here. The version we're familiar with is the one we have in front of us, right? The Fish Hotziat Atzmo Minaklal, in the third person, meaning this is the author of the Haggadah giving advice to you the parent, speaking to the child, and at the end is also part of what the author of the Haggadah is telling us, leave it alone, again in the third person, ilu hayasham, right? And our Haggadah basically says, ilu hayasham lo hayanigal, if he would have been there, he would not have been redeemed. Essentially what the Haggadah is telling us to do is give a response that's going to answer your problem, but it's not going to answer his problem, because there's nothing that we can say reasonably to this Rasha that's going to have an impact upon him. What we can do is we can respond to others around us. What's interesting here is that the Mechilta has a slightly different version, and when it got translated into the Haggadah, if it got translated into this, the Mechilta has actually all of this as a direct attack. It doesn't have it in the third person, but it has it in the second person. Lefisha would say that that's mechan in a klal, and because you took yourself out, right? So you tell him and tell him directly, and then ilu hayita sham, had you have been there, you would not have been redeemed. So the Mechilta actually wants you to engage in a polemic. The Haggadah says don't engage in the polemic. But if you don't respond, then it's a problem for everyone else. So we have over here, and the Rasha, the Tam somewhat clarified, and the question of the Rasha somewhat clarified as well. Now, again, I pointed out earlier that the Haggadah starts, the Haggadah's response starts with Lachem v'lo, picked up on that in the text of the Chumash itself. And if we take a look at two things really jump out at us. The first thing that jumps out at us is the response that the Chumash offers, and let's take a look at that response again. The response that the Chumash offers, and here on the right-hand side in the blue, Pasuk Kavzayin, Va'amartem, but you should say, Zevach Pesach Hu LaHashem, that this is a Korban Pesach to Hashem, etc. Asher Pasach, HaBatev Dei Sev Mitzrayim, Hashem skipped over the houses. One of the interesting things that's missing here is Va'amartem Elav, or Va'amartem Lo. All the others have some kind of directed response. If we take a look, for example, at the Tam, right opposite that in the blue, Va'amarta Elav, you should say to him, right? With the Shemi Yodei Yishol, Kigadata Levincha. Same thing is true when it comes to the Chacham. The Chumash tells us, Va'amarta Levincha, you should tell your son. That's missing over here when it comes to the question identified as the Rasha, which could have been what tipped off the author of the Haggadah to suggest over here that the Chumash itself is actually identifying this as the Rasha, because we're not speaking to him. We're speaking to everybody who's around. We're speaking to ourselves. The Chumash may even be assuming over here that the questioner is not going to hear the answer. Va'amartem, you must respond. And what is the response? The response is, God saved us because we did Korban Pesach. What the author of the Haggadah might be understanding from that, by the way, is that God saved us because we did the Korban Pesach. Had you have been there, you would not have done the Korban Pesach. That's why he would not have been saved, because you're challenging the whole notion. Well, had you have been there and you challenged the whole notion, you would not have come out. And we're all familiar with the Midrashim that talk about the vast numbers of Jews who never made it out of Mitzrayim. So here we have the author of the Haggadah picking up, perhaps, on nuances in the Chumash, not only to identify the question of the Rasha, but also to identify what kind of response. It's not a response to the Rasha, it is simply a response. You have to respond. You can't let the question go unanswered. The other piece over here that's interesting is it's Lachem. Okay, because Lachem, big deal out of. The interesting thing is, when you take a look at the question posed by the Chacham, and that's what we have up here now on the screen, the Chacham that sort of has a parallel. If you take a look on the right-hand side of the page, instead of Lachem, we have Etchem. Fundamentally, there's very little difference between Lachem and Etchem. Lachem is on the left-hand side, the question of the Rasha, and on the right-hand side, we have the question of the Chacham. That presents with a really big challenge, because if the Haggadah picked up on Lachem, then why not pick up on the Etchem? Apparently, it's not Lachem which is the key. It's what the Haggadah picks up on after the fact. After the fact that it's in the plural. After the fact that it's a question that's being stated as opposed to a question that's being asked. And all the other components that we saw there, the question that's identified with Chacham, even though it does have that Etchem, is not the Etchem with Lachem that really stands as the crux. But once we have all the other identifiers, could be that that's why the Haggadah said that this is really the question of the Rasha. How about the Chacham? So the Chacham really stands out as being, I think, the most interesting. One of the reasons that it's the most interesting is that all the other questions and all the other comments when the Torah tells us to tell our children about Yitziat Mitzrayim, the questions come in some kind of a context. It's a response to something. It is a response to Korban Pesach or a response to Bechor. Turns out that in Dvarim, this is in Parshat Ve'et Chanan, comes right after Aseret HaDibrot, and the Torah says, look, sometime in the future your kid's going to ask you about mitzvot. Ma'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim. And that's a very sophisticated kind of question, asking about the different kinds of mitzvot, eidot, chukim, mishpatim. They're all very different. Asher tziva, Hashem Elokeinu etchem. Tziva indicates that there's a commander, right? It's a very sophisticated kind of question. Hashem Elokeinu, he's our God. Meaning that there are many, many layers that help to identify this question as a question of a very wise person. But beyond that, there's no context for the question. It's not as if we're doing something strange, and then that strangeness sparks the question from the child. No, there's no context for it. At any point, kid might look and say, you know, we have lots and lots of mitzvot, can you please explain to me what it's all about? And that's really the source of the question of the Chacham, and why the question of the Chacham is so profoundly different. There is no scene, there is no context. And the question itself is a fairly sophisticated, detailed kind of question. What's interesting is that the Chumash offers a really good answer to the Chacham, and the Haggadah ignores that answer altogether. The answer the Chumash gives is actually the answer that's the beginning of what Shmuel's Haggadah. Avadim v'amata levincha, pasuk kafalos, avadim hayinu l'faroz mitzrayim v'yotinu that's a really lengthy kind of answer. So the question is, why doesn't the Haggadah quote the answer that the Chumash gives? I mean, that it would be a really great answer to offer, and instead goes and offers us something from a Mishnah Masechet Pesachim. What I'd like to suggest is that essentially what the Baal Haggadah did, he took a look at the Chumash, read the Chumash very carefully, and understood a really important nuance over here. The question the Chacham asks is a question about Eidot Chukim and Mishpatim. It's a legalistic kind of question. Explain to me the difference, explain to me what these mitzvot are, what these kinds are, what's an Eidah, what's a Chok, what's a Mishpat. We have lots and lots of different things in there. The answer doesn't match. We have a sophisticated question from a scholar, and the answer that the Chacham, that the Chumash gives is a story. Avadim hayinu lefarov Mitzrayim, v'yotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim v'yad chazaka. It's a story. Hashem, and then Hashem made us hotu moftim, and then Hashem took us out, and then Hashem promised us the land, and Hashem brought us to the land, and then Hashem told us to do mitzvot. Doesn't even go into all the details about Eidot, Chukim, Mishpatim. Simply says Hashem told us to do the mitzvot so it would be good for us. The Tov lanu, the Chayotenu Kayom Hazeh, and it's Tzedakah Tiyah lanu, Ki Nishmor La'asot V'Kol Mitzvah Hazot, Tzmei Hashem Elokeinu. So there seems to be a profound disconnect between the response that the Chumash gives and the question that the Chumash offers. What I'd like to suggest over here is that what the Chumash is doing is looking at this question over here. The question is a very sophisticated question indeed. But the Chumash wants the son to understand that mitzvot come in a context. It's precisely because there's no context that we identify the question as a question of a Chacham. But that also touched the wrong nerve, possibly, for Chazal, and maybe even for the Chumash. The concern being over here that we have somebody who's interested in a dry academic analysis of what the Torah is all about. And they're going to sit in the library and go to university and write lots of nice articles. What they're going to miss is the flavor. And the flavor is Yitziat Mitzrayim. The flavor is these mitzvot, and it's not just a legal system. There's a legal system that is part of a commitment to God. That's a very different kind of response. So we take a look at this person over here, and interesting, he's not identified as a tzaddik. He's a chacham, he's wise, he's intelligent, he's academic, he's very smart, he's thoughtful, he's probing, but there's something missing in terms of the heart. And the response that the Chumash offers is the response of the heart. Tell him stories. Now, he doesn't want to hear stories. He wants to hear a real detailed analysis. But the Chumash says, tell him stories. What does the Haggadah do? Haggadah has its own version of that. Afata emor lo ke hilchot pesach. Don't tell him hilchot pesach. Tell him ke hilchot pesach. Tell him things that are related to hilchot pesach. What the Haggadah does is it actually provides a platform to bridge between the question of the tzchacham and the response. It sounds like we're teaching him a halacha. In masivin achar pesach afikoman. But why can't we eat after the Pesach HaFikoman? Fundamentally, it's because we want the taste of the Karban Pesach in our mouths. Taste isn't something you can describe legally. Taste isn't something that you're going to get in an academic setting. Taste is something, the flavor, there's a flavor of Jewish life that's there in that taste. And Ein Masirin Achara Pesach HaFikoman looks like a halacha. But the Haggadah says, don't treat it like a halacha. Treat it as if it's a halacha. Teach him that he has to understand the flavor of Jewish life, not just the legal details of Jewish life. I'm reminded of an old joke about a brisker who was walking down the street and he sees an Arab running at him with a knife, and he says the bracha, you know, the shemu malchut of Sharek Dishan v'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lamut al b'tirish Hashem, and then somebody else comes along and kills the Arab. And the brisker is standing there saying, going, like he made the bracha, and now he doesn't want to have sex between the bracha and the kim hamitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And he's upset about the fact that his life was saved. Right? That's exactly what this question is responding to. Haggadah is saying, teach him ki l'chot ha-pesach, teach him things that are going to leave him a flavor, which is essentially what the Chumash is doing, but the Haggadah offers a bridge. The bridge starts talking the same language. Start talking about halacha, but move from the language of halacha to the language of the flavor of Judaism. The language of the flavor of mitzvot, not just the legal, the strict legality of the mitzvot. If I go back to our initial question, and I'm going to bring up the slide again. We posed four questions. We answered three. What's the origin of the Torah speaking about four sons? There are four places in the Torah where the Torah speaks about teaching your kids about Yitziat Mitzrayim. What determined the identification of each of the four? We started with the She'eino Yodea Lishol, which was the easiest. Then we separated, distinguished between the Tam and the Rasha. Then we distinguished between the Rasha and the Chacham. Where did the answers come from? Interestingly enough, from some place in Chumash. For the most part, but not always. Because what the Haggadah tried to do is, once it identified that there are four different types, not simply four different situations, but four different types in front of us, it had to tailor the answer. It couldn't just take the answer the way the Chumash presented it. It had to sharpen that so that it fit the typologies that were presented there in the first four. The last question we really haven't dealt with. I'd like to take just 2 minutes. I know I'm running over time over here, but just to take 2 minutes to discuss why this is an important important component of the Seder, and for Shmuel again a really central portion of the Seder. So what I would offer over here is two thoughts beyond what all the things that I'm sure you've heard. Lots and lots of times for different kinds of children, everybody needs their own kind of answer, different stages of life that people go through, and different stages people need to be addressed in different kinds of ways. It seems that by presenting the four sons to us, and presenting four questions from within the Chumash, what the Baal Haggadah is actually doing is anticipating the whole structure of the Seder. The whole structure of the Seder is designed to be a question-answer format. And in fact, there are a lot of things we do at the Seder in order to spark the kids to answer. Kedei sheyishalu atinokot. Right? It seems like that what Shmuel is saying is that's not simply a technicality, a way to keep the kids awake, but is a fundamental component of the way the learning at the Seder needs to take place. And the source for that is not the Mishnah, but the source for that the Haggadah wants to suggest is the Chumash itself. And here what I would ventures something fairly bold. We have a number of different things. We have the Korban Pesach as one of the sparks for the questions. We have the Mitzvah of Bechor as another spark for a question. We could sort of pose the question of do we do those things because of Mitzrayim, meaning Bechorim were saved in Mitzrayim, and that's why we do these things with Bechorim. We had Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim, and that's why we're doing Korban Pesach now, which is the way we usually think about these. Or perhaps what the Torah did, what Hashem actually did, was Hashem planted the questions for all future generations. Hashem gave us the mitzvot in order so that the kids should ask. It's not that we do the mitzvot and then the kids ask, but exactly the reverse. Hashem gave us the mitzvot in order so that the children should ask. Hashem gave us weird things to do, strange things to do, in order so that the next generation should be engaged. In which case, these four questions are so integral, because the mitzvot that spark them are so integral to the whole notion, means that right there in Mitzrayim, and Hashem is telling Moshe about this, and Moshe is telling B'nai Yisrael about these mitzvot, Hashem is already planting the seeds of the Seder. Chazal pick up on that later on. They say give the kid nuts and do all sorts of weird things. It's all there. The giving the kid nuts is the equivalent of Hashem telling us to bring a Bechor, the equivalent of Hashem telling us to bring the Korban Pesach. It's a bizarre kind of suggestion that I'm making over here, but it's possible that the core of the notion of the interactivity and the core of the Seder being and the experience of Yitziat Mitzrayim being an interactive question-answer really comes from the Chumash itself in the mitzvot that Hashem gives at Yitziat Mitzrayim. That's one possibility, and that's why for Shmuel this is a core element of the Haggadah. There's one other possibility I'd like to suggest, and with that I'll conclude. I'm 10 minutes over time. When we compare Shmuel's Haggadah, Shmuel's version of the Magid, to Rav's version of the Magid, Shmuel's version of the Magid is very, very short. Rav's version of the Magid is very, very long. It's basically everything from there until the end. It includes the drashot, the long, long series of drashot. It includes Dayenu, includes all that other stuff, and some very, very formal kinds of learning. Right? We quote a pasuk, and then we analyze the pasuk, and then we analyze the analysis of the pasuk. Men Tzayulmad. And we go and we do a drasha on that entire pasuk, a very lengthy drasha on that entire pasuk. Shmuel, Rav's Haggadah is a prescribed formal study. Shmuel's Haggadah is not. Shmuel's Haggadah says, tell the story. The story is about Im Hayinu. Tell it over and over again. Tell it one way to the Tam. Tell it a different way to the Chacham. Tell it a third way to the Shinu Yodei Lishol. Tell it a fourth way to the Rasha. Kulanu Chachamim, Kulanu Nivonim, Kulanu Zkinim. We have to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Mitzvah Aleinu Lisaper B'Yitziat Mitzrayim. We're not talking the story of Tarach and all that. We're telling the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And we're telling it over and over and over again. Kulam Arbel Lisaper B'Yitziat Mitzrayim Harei Zeh Meshubach. That's the core. For Shmuel, don't go into this depth analysis. The purpose of the Seder is not to sit there and give Divrei Torah. The purpose of the Seder is to retell the story and to retell the story over and over again in different ways. So by the time you're finished, you can close your eyes and actually see the water splitting. So by the time you're finished, you can close your eyes and actually see what the Egyptians are doing to Am Yisrael, and you're going to cry out in pain. Right? So you don't have to simulate make-believe with the salt water and make-believe with the haroset, but you're actually going to feel that. Again, tell the story again and again. It's almost like when you sit with a two-year-old and you read them a book and they tell me the story again and again and again, so that it becomes so real, so that it's hard to distinguish the fact from the fiction. Rav's Haggadah doesn't want you to do that. Rav's Haggadah wants you to go deeper and deeper in analysis and intellectual and midrashim and lots and lots of Divrei Torah. And Shmuel wants you to go deeper and deeper each time. It's the same Avadim Hayinu. Each one of the kids gets the story. The Tam gets the story. The Shinoi Yedei Lashol gets the story. Everybody gets the story. but everybody gets the story and they hear you tell the story to everybody else. And all night long, you're telling the story over and over again, so that by the time you get to the morning, you're living Yitziyat Mitzrayim. Okay? Here are our four questions. A little different from the four questions in the Haggadah. These are my four questions, and I hope I've been helpful in sort of explaining and elucidating and making this a little bit more meaningful for your own studying. I wanted to wish everyone a Chag Kasher Sameach.